Terminal Pursuits, A Good Omens Multivoice Podfic, written by Feral Tuxedo and voiced by
Sky Asimaru
and Chop. Chapter 2, Inside the Criminal Mind. Aziraphale Fell was furious when Crowley unlocked the attic room door the next morning.
"This is barbarous,"
he hissed, squeezing his way past before he had the chance to stop him.
"Tied up all night, my poor wrists look like roast potatoes. I don't suppose you've ever attempted to sleep with your hands bound together?"
Crowley stumbled along the corridor after him.
"Hi, where do you think you're going?"
They had reached the top of the stairs that led into the main part of the house. Fell whipped around, eyes blazing.
"To the loo, since you didn't have the decency to leave me so much as a chamber pot. Now untie me before I risk falling down these stairs. I'm no good to you with a broken neck, I dare say."
Crowley couldn't argue with that. He pulled his penknife from his pocket and sliced through the rope between Fell's hands until it came apart. Fell rubbed his wrists and, with a final look of disdain, turned on his heel and stomped down the stairs.
"Wait, wait, wait!"
Crowley called, half tripping over his own feet in his hurry to keep up. Fell marched along the second floor corridor to the door right at the end, ripped it open, and disappeared inside. Crowley rushed in after him and found himself in the largest bathroom he had ever seen in his life. There was a claw-footed bathtub that looked large enough for Crowley to fully submerge himself in it, toes outstretched and everything. There was a gold-framed mirror mounted to the wall, at least 6 feet tall. There was a chandelier, an electric one, but still, a chandelier in a bathroom. The room was brightly lit in white and dark egg blue by the morning sun streaming in through a white bay window behind the bathtub. Fell stood by the toilet, hands on his flies, looking at Crowley over one shoulder.
"Want to watch, do you? Hadn't taken you for that sort. Well, suit yourself."
"What? No!"
Crowley threw his hands in the air. He was much too tired for this. He really should have scoured the kitchen for coffee, or at least tea, before traipsing upstairs to the attic to free his captive. Alas, his too soft heart had gotten the better of him again.
Fine. I'll wait outside, but you keep talking to me. If there's even a second of silence, I'm coming in."
Fell deigned this command with little more than a huff and began instead to undo his belt. Crowley fled the bathroom, slammed the door shut, and leaned heavily against it.
"I'm still here,"
Fell said, his voice muffled by the thick wood of the door, but clearly audible over the splashing sound of urination.
"Though I do think you're exaggerating somewhat. Do I strike you as a man with the flexibility to climb through a second floor window? Not to mention that we're in the middle of nowhere, and I can't drive a motor car, and my hands are still half numb. This really is most uncivilized. Ah, that's much better. Oh, dear, there don't appear to be any towels here. Oh, well, my poor shirt is ruined already, and it was one of my favorites."
Crowley ripped open the door to find Fell at the sink, dabbing his hands on the stained cotton of his shirt.
"That's enough,"
Crowley barked, grabbing Fell's right forearm and twisting it behind his back. He raised the point of his knife to his throat.
"No more shenanigans now. You do as I say, or you'll get a lot more than a stained shirt. Understood?"
Fell swallowed hard, even as he winced from the roughness of Crowley's grip on the tender skin of his wrist.
Understood.
With an unpleasant heaviness in the pit of his stomach, Crowley marched Fell along the corridor, making sure to keep the knife point a good few inches away from his skin. He didn't want to hurt the man, which was certainly a novelty. Crowley had never been one to shy away from a good punch, or a well-aimed stab with a sharp blade. And yet, something in him wanted to spare Zirafael Fell any more pain than he'd already caused. A sensation he didn't like, and which he did not want to examine closer right now. The first floor corridor was as huge as the other one, lined with just as many closed doors. Crowley banged against one of them.
There's too many bloody rooms in this place.
He swallowed down the steadily rising feeling that he was in over his head with this, and pushed open a random door on his right. It was a bedroom with an elegantly carved wardrobe in the corner and an equally elegant four-poster bed in the center. It wasn't the room he'd spent the night in, but it looked nearly identical. The next 3 doors along were also bedrooms. One of those was the one that Crowley had chosen for his own the previous night. The covers were ruffled and the curtains drawn across the tall windows. Not that he'd gotten much sleep, and tossing and turning in a silk-covered four-poster bed had not been nearly as luxurious an experience as he'd hoped.
There's got to be rooms here that aren't bedrooms.
Fell huffed and crossed his arms, peering through the doorway.
Not up here. I expect you'll find the reception rooms downstairs.
Crowley lifted his knife again and pointed it right at Fell's forehead.
Fine. Off you go. One wrong move and you'll slice me open like an envelope. Yes, yes, I get it.
Fell raised his arms, hands coming to rest on either side of his head as he walked along the corridor and down the stairs. The sight of his raw wrists made Crowley uncomfortable. Perhaps he should get him something for it. Some salve, perhaps, or bandages. At the bottom of the stairs, Fell stopped, turning around to shoot Crowley a questioning look. He pointed his knife at the first door on the right.
In there.
Fell dutifully opened the door, peered inside, and then disappeared with a squeal of delight.
It's a library!
Crowley followed, finding Fell with his arms outstretched as if he was trying to hug every single one of the thousands of books that filled the dusty shelves. The floor was covered in a burgundy carpet, with sofas and chairs upholstered in rich emeralds and oranges dotted about like enormous jewels. The ceiling was impossibly high, but any echo was swallowed up by paper and velvet, wood and brocade. Fell inhaled deeply, and for the first time that morning, a smile spread across his features.
Yes, this will do very well. Oh, look, there's even a desk here.
He practically skipped towards it. And a magnificent desk it was, large and mahogany, facing one of the 5 windows that were set along the length of the wall. Its surface was cluttered with an odd assortment of items. There was a crystal ball perched on a wooden stand, a deck of playing cards that looked positively ancient, and a brass bowl filled with what appeared to be pigeon feathers. But right in the center stood...
A typewriter,
Fell breathed, studying it with a gleam in his eyes. It looked cold and heavy, all polished back iron and spindly silver bits.
Right, 'cause you've got a ransom note to write. Sit down.
Fel did not sit down. He turned around and frowned.
A ransom note. Isn't that rather your responsibility?
Sit down,
Crowdy repeated, with a little more bite. Fel pulled out the heavy wooden chair from underneath the desk and sat. Crowley pocketed his penknife and walked around to the front of the desk and leaned against the windowsill behind it.
Is there a paper in there?
Fel pulled open a desk drawer and drew out a thick sheet of paper. Crowley snatched it from between his fingers before he held it up to the light streaming in from the window. Perfect. No watermark, no pre-printed header. Just a plain white sheet of paper. He let it flutter back down to the desktop.
So the address is,
Crowley rummaged in the pockets of his trousers until he'd found the anonymous letter.
It's Fell Manor, Eastgate.
I know my own address, thank you. And anyway, what are you reading that from?
Fell craned his neck to peek at the letter. Crowley clutched it to his chest.
None of your business. Get writing.
Fell typed away, and Crowley watched in awe. He'd never learned to type, had never needed to. It didn't look that complicated, just pressing the key with the corresponding letter on it. But Fell's fingers moved over the machine so quickly, with a click-clacking sound that was absolutely mesmerizing.
What next?
Fell asked, after he typed his parents' address in the top right corner.
Right. I am being held captive by a most unhinged and violent criminal.
No offence, my dear, but you don't strike me as particularly unhinged.
Shut up. He demands the exact sum of 15,000...
15,000 pounds! You severely overestimate my family's regard for me.
10,000?
You can certainly try.
Right. He demands the sum of 10,000 pounds, paid promptly in cash, to be delivered to...
The click-clacking stopped.
How are you going to send this note?
What?
Fell sat up straight, fingers still hovering over the keys.
We're quite far away from the Fell estate. Surely if you send this letter by post, it can be traced back to the nearest post office.
Well, I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
Fuck, he hadn't thought of that at all. He'd have to drive elsewhere to post the letter, or find someone trustworthy to deliver it. But that was a problem for later.
10,000 pounds, delivered promptly to St. James Park, London, where the money is to be wrapped in an unmarked paper bag and placed under the bench by the duck pond, nearest the Regent Street entrance, in the shade of the beech tree.
Oh?
What oh?
Fell studied him with a curious look.
How does that work, then? Say Gabriel goes and puts the money under the bench. What happens next?
My accomplice picks it up and keeps it safe for me.
Ingenious.
He looked genuinely delighted at the idea.
And what if my family alarm the police and they lie in wait for your accomplice?
Then I'll have to kill you.
I see.
Fell said, completely unfazed by that possibility.
So you await your accomplice's signal before you release me?
Yep, that's the plan.
But surely your accomplice is doing this at great risk to his own safety.
Her own safety. And she's getting a hefty cut of the ransom money, if all goes well.
Crowley wasn't quite sure why he was telling Fell all of this.
That's what's in it for her. She's been in the game for longer than I've been alive, and hasn't been caught a single time.
The very idea that Tracy might get in trouble was laughable. Fel nodded, clearly impressed, and it filled Crowley with a strange sense of accomplishment. He didn't often get praise for his work, certainly not from the victims of his crimes.
Outstanding. Right, shall we get on with this letter then? And afterwards, if you don't have any other plans, I should like to spend an hour or two writing my novel. After months of the most debilitating writer's block, I'm positively drowning in ideas.
Crowley shrugged, still baffled by the fact that Aziraphale Fel appeared to consider his own abduction like more than a holiday in the countryside. As if he'd read his thoughts, Fel looked up from the typewriter and batted his eyelashes.
If you could rustle up a pot of tea and some breakfast, that would be just lovely.
The morning passed, and Crowley spent it leaning against the window, watching Fel type away at his novel, fingers flying over the keys. Damn, he didn't even have to look at them. His gaze was firmly fixed to the sheet of paper that was emerging from the top of the typewriter, covered in black ink. Once it was filled, it joined the others on a steadily growing pile at the back of the desk. The sun had risen well above the horizon now and was blazing through the library window. In this light, Crowley got a proper look at his victim for the first time since he'd bundled him into the stolen Bentley the night before. The most surprising realization was, perhaps, that Aziraphale Fel was not much younger than he was, if at all. Crowley had been thinking of him as a child, a bratty, spoiled 20-year-old. He'd been mistaken. There couldn't be more than 2 or 3 years between them. He'd been tricked by Fel's youthful innocence, by his dangerous delight in his own dire situation. But now, with his brow furrowed and his shoulders tense with focus, he appeared different. Older, certainly, but also wiser. It threw a whole new light on his carefree conduct. Perhaps it wasn't naivety or stupidity, but simply stoicism, optimism, the desire to make the best of his situation, and if his situation was to be trapped in a house with Crowley, then he'd make it as pleasant a stay as he possibly could. There was something else about him, too, a softness that was reflected in the golden shimmer of his still unruly hair where the sunlight hit, and the gentle arch of his chafed wrists bent over the keys of the typewriter. Even in his wine-stained shirt and wrinkled waistcoat, there was an elegance about him that Crowley found himself drawn to like he'd never known before.
Are you just going to stand there and watch me write?
Fel asked, without looking up. Crowley shrugged as a flush rose to his ears.
Got nothing else to do?
Not until he'd figured out what to do with the ransom letter.
You're in a library. There's thousands of things to do.
Not much of a reader, me.
In that case, you could help me with a question or two.
Fel's head tipped up. He let on an impatient huff.
Oh, do come over here. I can't bear you looking down at me like a schoolmaster.
Crowley moved around to the other side of the desk, leaning over the back of the chair. He pressed a hand on the warm wood. He'd only have to stretch out a finger to see if it matched the heat of Fel's body.
If you were a kidnapper...
Fel began, with a coy look up at Crowley. He snorted, trying to tear his mind away from this strange desire to smooth out the wrinkled fabric of Fel's collar.
If I was a kidnapper...
Quite.
A sly grin spread on Fel's youthful face.
Try to imagine it, if you will. If you were a kidnapper, how would you know which victim to pick? I expect a rich family is a given, but are there criteria beyond that?
You want to know why I chose you?
Yes.
Crowley laughed, unsure why the question made his nerves flutter.
Ha! I mean, as you said, you're rich, and I knew you were going to the theatre last night.
Only that?
That, and somebody had written to Crowley, practically begging him to kidnap the man.
Yeah.
Fel looked disappointed.
I expect the kidnapper in my novel will have a more glamorous motive.
Like what?
I haven't decided yet. Perhaps he's desperately in love with his victim and won't stop at anything to pull her away from her dreadful fiancé.
What? So he kidnaps her? That's not love. That's lunacy.
I wouldn't know much about either.
The admission evidently flustered him. He pulled the sheet of paper out of the typewriter with such force it tore. With a sheepish look and bright red cheeks, he set it aside and turned once more to Crowley.
Lord, I could queue for a cigarette right now.
It didn't take more than a raised eyebrow for Crowley to draw his own cigarette case from his pocket, shaking his head. He pulled a roll up from it and handed it to Fel before he fumbled in his other pocket for the matches.
Didn't bother to take your own with you to the theatre?
Oh no, I much prefer stealing my friends. The thrill of theft makes them so much more satisfying.
You've really got a thing for crime, huh?
One likes to entertain oneself, especially without the independence to live the life to which one finds oneself drawn.
The bitterness leaked through the facade of his smile. Crowley didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, well, it's a lot less entertaining when you're actually involved in the business.
I am getting that impression. Is this what we do, then? Sit around in yesterday's clothes, waiting for my parents to send you money?
Pretty much. But hey, at least you've got a typewriter.
Fel looked at it with a frown.
I suppose so. My editor will be happy, should I survive this ordeal, of course.
He held the cigarette out for Crowley to light, took a drag, and then coughed.
Oh, good heavens! This is absolutely vile! Oh, it tastes like a chimney in desperate need of cleaning!
Crowley snatched it from Fel's hand and put it in his own mouth. It was fine, perfectly good tobacco, the same he'd smoked since he was 13. Fel stared at the cigarette between Crowley's fingers with longing. Tough luck. He shouldn't have insulted it. Crowley sauntered over to one of the squashy sofas, secure in the knowledge that Fel wouldn't try to escape through the window. The key to the library door was safely tucked away in his right boot. To his surprise, Fel got up from the desk and followed him, dropping down on the navy velvet next to him.
You said you'd help me with my novel.
I never did.
Well, I want you to help me with my novel. It's the least you can do for me after bringing me here in such a barbaric manner.
I don't owe you nothing.
Fel leaned closer, eyes fixed once again to the glowing tip of the cigarette between his lips.
Quite right, you don't. But it would be terribly kind if you did.
I'm not kind. The sooner you realize that, the better.
Fell's smile did not waver.
Be that as it may, but you're the only company available to me right now.
Crowley tore his gaze away, squirming.
Yeah, fine. Tell me about your novel, then.
Fell rubbed his hands together, elbow bumping into Crowley as he wiggled from side to side.
Of course, it's a sequel to Murder in Eden. You should read it, by the way. It is a most thrilling tale, if I say so myself. Perhaps there's a copy in this very library.
He scanned the bookshelves around them, but didn't appear to spot the title in question.
Anyway, in the first novel, our hero solved the most slippery of murder cases and gained rightful recognition for it. He's not what you'd call a typical detective, gloomy and serious. No, he's much more refined in manners, but in a way that makes people quite underestimate him. He's handsome and easygoing and chatty, the type who makes friends easily and draws the confidence of those around him.
Bit like you, then.
You think me handsome?
Crowley coughed. Perhaps his tobacco was a little rough on the back of his throat. He never noticed before.
Not in that grubby stained shirt and waistcoat. You look freshly stabbed.
Fell raised his eyebrows, looking rather pleased with himself.
Do forgive my impudence. I didn't pack a valise when I went to the theatre last night.
Crowley threw his head back into the velvet headrest of the sofa, caught between a groan and a laugh. Whatever these next few days would bring, he would certainly not get bored. To be continued in chapter 3.